It is the Doomsday Podcast, and it is another Cowboys loss as they lose 31-24 to the Chicago Bears, and live from the Windy City, it is Ed Werder, and he has just come from the stadium. It is late. It is in the aftermath of this one, a very, very ugly loss by the Dallas Cowboys. And Ed, how would you, and we're going to let people hear from Jerry, but you've been around Jerry after a lot of games. How would you describe, was it anger? Was it just almost resignation? What was sort of the Jerry's tone? He tried to keep it short, but you guys did a good job of kind of keeping him going a little bit. What was Jerry's reaction after this one?
I would say the anger from Foxborough that became frustration last week in the loss to Buffalo has now morphed into complete and utter exasperation. The point he kept making was, we just need to win a game. We just need to win a game. Like, you know, he knows eventually that's going to matter, that eventually they are going to have to win a game. It hasn't seemed like not winning a game has had any significant effect on the fate of this team, because no matter how often they lose, and oh, by the way, they've won 3 of their last 10 games, they're still somehow in first place in their division and in full control of their playoff fate. But Jerry knows eventually they have to win a game. And he was asked whether he questions if this team has the talent or the mental toughness in the locker room to do so. He said he did not believe that to be an issue, that he believed they possessed those necessary qualities in that regard from a player standpoint. He said the problem in his mind is coordinating it all, choreographing it all, and bringing it together on game day, which to me sounds like he still thinks it's a coaching issue.
Yeah, that's exactly
what
it sounds like.
And despite that, he seemed very determined as ever, not to replace Jason Garrett until the season is over, even though people like Michael Irvin, former Cowboys Hall of Fame receiver, said on the network for which he collects a paycheck that he thinks that Jason Garrett has to go. Even though he considers himself a friend and a supporter of Jason Garrett's, he believes it is time for Jason Garrett to go. And Troy Aikman, on his broadcast of the game tonight, another Hall of Fame Cowboy player, said that he doesn't know how you recover from this. And I think that's a fair question, and I think that's kind of the question that nobody could really answer, whether it was Jerry or it was a guy like Jason Witten, who's played more games in a Cowboys uniform than anybody in the history of the franchise. I asked him, how do you still believe in these guys? And he says, you know, we talk a lot about having the right kind of guys. And he says, but, you know, that has to come to the game. That has to show up on the field. And tonight, he said, it didn't. And I think the one thing I would give Jerry credit for is he's seeing it for what it is. You know, he's kind of resigned to not doing something preemptively that he thinks could provoke a positive change. And whether that's a mistake or not remains to be determined and is a matter of great debate. But he does see it for what it is. In other words, he was very specific about the game that was played was not represented accurately on the scoreboard, that the Bears totally dominated them, that the Cowboys did everything possible in every phase of the game you can to lose the game, noting, of course, they did win the turnover battle and still got beaten badly. But so he's seeing it for what he is. He's not standing there saying, hey, we only lost by, you know, 7 points when it was really pretty much a 20 to 24 point game most of the way. So at least he's seeing reality. He may not be reacting in the way that people want, but I guess we're going to have to defer to his judgment on whether that's the right course of action here.
You know, Aikman, you talked about one thing he said. Another thing he said with about 7 or 8 minutes left in the game was that there was no, I mean, and, you know, he obviously is a close friend of Jason Garrett's. But he referenced the fact that a lot of people wanted Jason Garrett to be fired. But in his mind, the statement he made was that there is no one on the staff, a position coach,
right,
much less a coordinator, that has earned the right to be an interim coach. Interestingly, 9.5 years ago or 10 years ago, it was Jason Garrett who became the interim head coach, and they gave him the opportunity, and they felt like he did enough in the rest of that season in 2010 to demonstrate that he should be the head coach. And they, it's Aikman is saying what a lot of us have said, but it sort of means a lot when Aikman says it. But that just tells you what the staff is like. I mean, I know you and I both like Kitna, but for the most part, it's almost impossible to point to anybody on this staff that seemingly is doing a really good job.
Right, and so by extension, I think Jerry is then saying, I may interview as a courtesy some of the people on my staff for the head coaching position, but I have no intention of hiring any of them to be the next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. And the point that you were making about Jason is true. Not only did he think he was ready to be the head coach, but he was on Wade's staff precisely for that eventual purpose. And Wade knew it as well as Jerry and Jason knew it, and that created a certain amount of awkwardness, especially when Jason was a coordinator making more money than the head coach. And that created some issues, obviously, some dysfunction, but the Cowboys are well-suited to deal with dysfunction. It's been that way for 30 years. But this is really, I used the word exasperating before, and that's to me what it really is, because, I mean, I can't think of a time in the 30 years I've covered this team where we thought more of the players and the team itself than we have seen any time recently. I said last week I don't know what thing it is that they do well, and I still don't. They don't do anything well. I mean, they've been behind by 17 or more points 4 times this year. And yet they're in first place. They've got 2-3-game losing streaks, and yet they're still in first place. But they don't do anything well. I mean, 2 weeks in a row, they've gone down and driven the football the length of the field on the first possession and scored a touchdown to take the lead, and then done absolutely nothing while their opponent, in Buffalo's case, scored 26 consecutive points. And tonight the Bears scored 24 consecutive points before the Cowboys finally responded. But they just don't do anything well. They don't compete. And we all saw the quit in Green Bay when Wade Phillips got fired in 2010. And I thought we probably saw it last week when they gave up 26 points in succession. And I sure as hell saw it tonight at Soldier Field with all the missed tackles on Mitch Trubisky's 23-yard touchdown run through the heart of the defense tonight. I don't think there's any question whatsoever there was a total lack of effort on a lot of plays on the defensive side of the ball. I thought Elliott ran hard throughout the course of the game. I thought Dak battled, as you would expect. I think the defense, while not alone, the defense, I think there are a lot of questions about the effort that some of those players are putting forth.
Yeah, I think that's true. Trubisky stands out because it's not like he's been running for a lot of yards this year. He has in the past. He hasn't done it this year. And he ran all over the Cowboys. Josh Allen, the previous week, did something similar. I thought the effort was poor. You know, it's never a good look when Jalen Smith, the guy you and I both like a lot or have had some great interviews with, but the celebration when they're down 24-7, you know, just some of that stuff's a bad look. And then I don't know if you saw on the TV broadcast on Fox, Ed, the cameras were trying to kind of cover the sidelines. Witten was screaming at people. I thought it was interesting. At one point, they kind of caught Jalen Smith trying to talk to somebody, and Jalen Smith tried to tell the cameras to go away. I mean, it was a very volatile sideline. But it's just, again, what Fox did a pretty good job of is showing the juxtaposition of Witten losing his mind on somebody, and then in the same deal, they just would show Garrett. It was just that kind of look like of just kind of
look of
in
resignation,
a trance.
Total detachment. Yeah.
Yeah.
A man resigned to his fate.
And that's what it feels like.
And you know, you mentioned Witten, and he was very emotional on the sidelines and very demonstrative. And he was asked afterward to explain that, and he said, "Did you see the game?" I was trying to get something going, and we don't know who he was yelling at. There have certainly been other instances where he's been emotional like that. He's directed some of that at the offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore, but we didn't see who he was shouting at in this particular circumstance. But, you know, he's right when he continues to say, you know, we're always saying we have the right kind of guys, but that has to show up, and it didn't tonight in this game. And I asked him how he can expect people to believe in this team when they've gone 3-7 in their last 10 games. And he said, hey, that's a fair question, and I don't expect anyone on the outside to believe in us until we go out on the field and prove it to them through our performance. So I think at least there's a sense of reality. I don't know if these players want it anymore. I mean, maybe they think they're going to win the division. They just have to win two games, and one of them has to be against Philadelphia, and you know, somehow they're going to be magically restored. But I'm just not sure that that's going to happen. I know these games ultimately, you know, don't really matter mathematically, but you can't tell me that this team's going to lose 5 or 6 games in a row and then expect to go in and play well and beat Philadelphia and then win the next week against Washington. You know, there's two teams in the NFL this year that have allowed 31 points to the offensively limited Chicago Bears. One is the first team in the NFL to fire its coach, and that was the Redskins and Jay Gruden. And the other one is tonight the next team that may fire its coach.
Wow, yeah, that is true. Let's listen to Ed was right there on the scene tonight and put in a full day's work, in a full night's work right there at Soldier Field. Let's take a listen. This will give you an opportunity, and we have this in its entirety. This is Jerry Jones speaking to reporters after the game, as Ed explains it, an exasperated Jerry Jones. Here is the full interview.
Okay, we had a little complaining last week about the marathon. I mean, this is going to be the shortest marathon y'all have ever heard. Chicago took it to us. We won't be going anywhere until we can win a football game. They played us well enough tonight to deserve to win the football game. We did all of the things that you can do that cause you to lose football games in the game. That's where it is. Until we can get over here and we'll line up against the Rams, until we can win a football game, I don't care what kind of contention we're in, we've got to start playing and winning a football game so that we can be able to play better than we played tonight. We thought we would be able to play better defense against what they were doing. To their credit, they really were very effective against our defense, obviously, and I'm not telling anything anybody didn't know. So that's the way we look at it. We'll line them up here next week. We're going to go practice, and we're going to try to win a football game. And everybody that's in here that's healthy, and everybody that's healthy that's coaching will be coaching. Everybody that's in here that will be playing, and we just got to play better.
Jerry, does it feel like this is going backwards at all?
Well, it's not. It's leveled out here. It's losing, losing, losing. So I'm not trying to be funny here, but the point is that we've got to win a football game. I don't care what the standings are, what the numbers are. We had thought that we could come up here and play a really fine football game team, I mean a good team, play a fine football game, and get our act where we're starting to look like a team that could, if we by a slim chance, get in the playoffs where we could win. We can't do that until we play and start winning the football games, and we've got 3 more to play. When we do that, we can go. That's it. I'm not going to answer why I think of saying what I'm saying.
No, I'm not saying why. I'm just saying that, you know, how frustrating is the view after the cramp, you know, the emotions of last week and Michael Bennett doing what he did, and certainly 2 weeks ago you going off on the coaches. Yeah. It's still not done.
Well, again, it shows so much for that about effectively what wins or loses football games. That's not what gets it done. What gets it done is going out here, not making mistakes on third down, getting them off the field, us staying on the field, not getting in a spot. We came up here to run the football. You get behind 20 points, you can't run the football. You've got to do other things. They know you're going to be doing it. They pin their ears back. Here you go. They played a really fine football game tonight, and they took it to us. And in about every way you want to list it, they beat us tonight. We did win the turnover battle. And it shows you can win the turnover battle and still lose the ball game. So we just got to see if we can step in here and win a football game. I don't care if we stay in contention all the way down to the they have the playoffs. We've got to start showing our fans, more importantly, showing ourselves that we can do the things to win the games. It's hard to do it when you extend their possessions and you make mistakes on third down. It's hard to do it when you either create penalties. It's hard to do it when you miss field goals. That the last two games have shown up. We got down near the end and looked up and we had a chance, potentially, but we'd really had a chance both the last two games if we'd kicked our field goal. Well, that's if stuff, and we know that is. We're not playing well enough to actually get close enough so at the end of the game we could actually tie one at the last minute or win it at the last minute. You have to be able to do that in the NFL. We're not doing that right now. We're not a team that's capable of doing that. We got to see if we can get it together for the Rams.
Do you change kickers now? I mean, do you look at another kicker?
Again, I'm not going to get into those kinds of details. Have a good assessment of what the kicking situation is availability-wise other than the kickers we have right now. And so that'll dictate what we're doing.
Jerry, the public criticism that you've lodged or given your coaching staff and some of the uncertainty that you've loaded on the team, how much does that contribute to the problems you've been having?
The what?
I said, do you think that is contributing to the problem that you guys are having, the public criticism and the uncertainty that there is around the coaching staff now?
The same way that my praise of them is contributing. You may have noticed I've been praising them too. So much for words. Seriously, so much for words. I don't think so. Until we get out there and do the right things, let's say we get some third down, get them to turn the ball over to us on third down. Those missed field goals are like turnovers. But we're obviously, everybody in this huddle right here, we know that score didn't indicate how bad they beat us tonight.
Jerry,
the score was a lot closer. They beat us real good tonight.
Jerry, a 7-9 or 8-8 division win, would that be acceptable?
A what?
A 7-9 or 8-8 division win, would that be acceptable?
Are you asking me if I would take the division and go to the playoffs if we got it? On any basis, the answer is yes. Absolutely, yes. Acceptable? I don't know. Not if we're not playing good. But if we're playing a lot better than we played tonight, I'll take getting in the... Are you talking about getting in the playoffs? Well, yes, I would. On any basis. I realize if we don't play better and look better in the last game than we look tonight, then that's tough to think about having success in the playoffs. But, you know, the first goal is to get to the playoffs.
Are you questioning the talent on this team or their mental makeup? I mean,
I didn't hear that when I'm saying I'll question.
No, I'm asking you, do you, at this point, the way this team is playing, with so much on the line and they're not able to respond, do you question the talent or their mental makeup right now?
I don't think so. All these guys are mentally okay for me.
Okay.
And all these guys are talented enough for me. So that's good. I'm questioning how to put together a coordinated one that complements each other, how to put together a team that can win a football game. And so it's obvious, you know that we are not putting together collectively on all phases of the game as well as within the same phase of the game. We're not collectively getting together as a team and doing the things it takes to win a ball game. You don't win games if you don't do that.
That's a question of the coach again.
Do you feel like at any point these guys quit out there tonight, or do you feel like they all gave maximum effort?
Again, I know that everyone is disappointed with the outcome. We all thought that we could come up here and play a good football game. We didn't. It is imperative for us to, as we go down toward the playoffs, it's imperative that we play a good football game. I thought tonight we would come up here and play a good football game. I think everybody did, and we didn't. They did play a good football game, and so that's the way it goes.
Thank you, Jerry.
All right, there he was, Jerry. And Ed, when Jerry makes the statement, basically like we just don't have, you know, he thinks they're still mentally, the makeup's okay. He still thinks they have talented players. But, and you hit on this a little earlier, but just to expound on this, he says something about, we just don't have anybody, we're not coordinating the two together. They're not complementing each other. And that did seem like another direct hit toward this coaching staff, is what Jerry tried not to go after the coaches, but that's kind of where he ended up in this interview.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is, like, I asked the question sort of, you know, rhetorically and somewhat humorously after the game of one of my colleagues. I said, you know, who do you think Jerry's going to fire first? You know, Maher, the kicker who has now missed 10 kicks on field goal attempts this year, the most in the NFL, or Garrett? Like, Maher may outlive Garrett, ultimately. And I just think that the fact that they have not replaced Brett Maher, when he's missed as many field goals as he has, especially from 40 to 49 yards, what is he, 1 for 5? I mean, every kicker in the league makes that kick. And they can't bring themselves to make that change. They haven't done anything to make themselves better and get themselves out of this funk or this hole that they've been in. Nothing. They do nothing. They have not made one lineup change all year long that hasn't been forced upon them because of an injury. And they have refused. Bill, you know, I think the guy in New England, Bill Belichick, has won 6 rings. I think he has a 10-win team. He's about to turn to his 4th kicker, okay? The Cowboys still have the one that they started the season with, even though he's missed more kicks than anybody in football and continually lets them down. I had research do this fact check for me. I said, how many points have opponents scored as a direct result of Maher missing a kick and giving them field position? 27 points this year. 4 touchdowns that Maher has missed a field goal and the opponent has immediately seized possession of the ball and swept the field on the Cowboys and turned his 3-point miss into 7 points their own way, 4 times.
27 points. Let me ask you this. Do the Panthers or even the Redskins, is there any advantage to what they've done? Redskins were the first to bring in an interim coach in Callahan. I mean, he was already on the staff, but they made that move with Gruden. The Panthers have done it now with Ron Rivera, and they bring in Perry Fuel as the interim head coach. Do those teams, by virtue of making the decision at the time they did, do they have any decided advantage over the Cowboys by having made that decision when they did?
Well, I think they have an advantage. And, you know, the Redskins obviously have had it for several months and haven't taken advantage of it in any significant way that we're aware of. There haven't even been any rumors or reports about, you know, Snyder talking to college coaches or pursuing other, you know, people who have been out of it, who have been in that position but are now out of the NFL. I assume he's been gathering opinions and identifying candidates. Now, David Tepper, the owner of the Carolina Panthers, when he dismissed Ron Rivera during the season, was very specific about saying that was why he was doing it. A, he didn't want to go behind Rivera's back and have him hear that they were interviewing other people. He wanted to be able to do that in the clear light of day and with a clear conscience. So that is what he intends to do. That being said, I mean, I don't think that's going to affect the Cowboys' list of candidates, because I think anybody who gets their choice of jobs between the Carolina Panthers, the Washington Redskins, and the Cowboys, if they think they're in play with the Cowboys, they're going to wait on the Cowboys. I mean, it's that high profile a team. It's that highly regarded a franchise and a job, even though there are some unique challenges that are in all likelihood going to be forced upon you should you endeavor to be one of Jerry Jones's coaches. But I think with the young roster that they have and with the talent that they have that we don't see on Sundays any longer, I still think it's an attractive job. Whether Jerry's willing to pay, I don't know. You know, Jerry's always said, we're the Dallas Cowboys. We can have the best that there is in coaching. And my question is, well, then why don't you ever have that? How come you only had that twice with Jimmy Johnson and with Bill Parcells, arguably? Other than that, who has Jerry gone and gotten who was a big-name person who was desirable in the NFL, who would be considered quite a get for the Cowboys? Never. He's never done that. And I think it's all because Jerry has also believed that you don't have to pay top dollar for quality coaches. And I think he's mistaken in that regard. And if he's not willing to pay now, then they're not going to get the best coach available to them.
Yeah, I think you're right. There is one report out there from the NFL Network that Stephen has talked to Urban Meyer. Now, of course, we don't know if that was just visiting with him at some point. If they cross paths, who knows? But this is the time.
Well, Urban Meyer has obviously openly campaigned for the job. I mean,
he did bring it up.
He's spoken nationally about how attractive it is. He mentioned it being the one job you would have to consider, even if you weren't considering coming back into coaching. And he specifically mentioned Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott's presence on the roster as young players that you could build your franchise around and win with right away. So he certainly seems to have a level of interest in, and I think the Cowboys should certainly explore that. I think he's a potentially good candidate, although there are going to be some issues he's going to have to answer for as well in terms of his conduct that cost him his job ultimately at Ohio State and the fact that he's cited health problems as a reason for leaving coaching on two other occasions.
Yeah, I promise you the conduct thing, if anybody can get by it, it would be Jerry Jones. All right, let's before we wrap the show up, let's listen to let's do an interview right now. And Glenn Stretch Smith, and Ed, while you were finishing up all your duties from Big ESPN, we were talking to Glenn Stretch Smith. And Ed, I'm sorry, there were some expletives. He was an angry man tonight. And there was something he said about a condition that I think he said the cornerbacks make his something itch. And I mean, it's very, yeah. You'll want to hear this, I promise you. Here is Glenn Stretch Smith on his stretch plays. This is a pitiful performance by the Cowboys in so many ways. They got off to a decent start, got the 7-0 lead just like they did against Buffalo, and then they pretty much wilted after that. Stretch, we'll get to the grades here in a second. Is this a is tonight the night you say there is no coming back from this? I mean, even Aikman, a guy you know extremely well, had the quote, "I don't know how they come back from this." Is there any?
I mean, it's this is bad a performance as I've seen by a Cowboy team in a long time. I mean, it short of absolutely looking like they quit. I mean, this team looked like it just almost rolled over. And I mean, when you look at the tackling, when you look at the angles, the poor angles, how the defense was playing. I mean, we could sit here and literally, if you're honest with yourself, when you grade the film, you have to grade by play and you either give a plus or a minus. There is no in between. And you could just start, I mean, literally you would just start drawing minus, minus, minus. It's maddening. It was maddening to watch. It's maddening to look at. I have no idea what the flight home is going to be like. It's got to be miserable, and they're going to be off for 10 days. So they're going to have to stew over this situation. But really, as poor a defensive performance as I've seen by a Cowboy team in a long, long time.
You know, it would be somewhat of a mercy killing for this team for the Eagles to go out and find a way to win on Sunday and get to or maybe they – when do the Eagles play? Monday night? Yeah, it's actually a Monday night game against the Giants. For the Eagles to get to 6-7 and get in a position where they could put the Cowboys out of misery, it would almost be better for this organization. Jerry Jones was as frustrated as ever after this one. After him hawing around for a little bit, he finally seemed to kind of point toward the coaches with what he said. Let's start. Stretch, we know you hate the special teams, and again, they were pitiful. This kicker needs to be gone. It's an indictment on this coaching staff and this organization that the kicker still was out there and he was put in position to miss a 42-yarder and then kick a ball out of bounds when they finally showed a little bit of fight. He followed that up after 24-14. He followed that up by kicking the ball out of bounds and giving Chicago the ball at the 40. Let's look at this offense. Dak Prescott, a man who, you know, at one point, 3 or 4 weeks ago, was thought of as an MVP candidate. Obviously, that's not the case anymore. Had some pretty loose throws throughout the evening. Rallied a little bit late, but I thought some of that was kind of garbage time in a sense. Even Jerry admitted the final score was not indicative of the way the game went. How would you assess this quarterback play?
Well, it's frustrating there too. I mean, I've taken some criticism for being critical of him, and I'm saying, you know, my point of reference was Aikman. I mean, that was our quarterback when I was here, and so that is my pro reference. And maybe that's at times unfair to Dak because I'm comparing him to a Hall of Fame quarterback, but when you miss slot slant throws that literally are 15, 18-yard throws that should be made 99 out of 100 times right in the guy's face mask, and you miss those, to me, that really reeks of a problem. And it's starting to be a problem because he's missing two or three of those a game. Now, he made an incredible play with a guy on his back when he hit the dig to Gallup. I mean, he makes some really strong throws, but he misses throws that he should be able to make. And I think that's the thing that really keeps Steven from wanting to pay him the money that probably he deserves. And tonight, you got to have your quarterback in those situations. When your defense is struggling, you got to have your quarterback go and take the bull by the horns and stick some of those throws on guys. And because of that, I'm giving him barely a decent grade and a C-, but he has got to become more accurate with the football, especially when he plays outside of an indoor condition in a, you know, 72-degree arena that we have here at AT&T.
All right, and after that 10-day break, there will be the Rams coming in. We'll see how they shape up against them. The receivers, let's look at that group, and let's include the tight ends. And I kind of jokingly said it, oh, there's Jarwin. They've done a good job of hiding him throughout much of the season. He made a couple of plays early in the game, and then, of course, as they do, he sort of got lost throughout the game. What did you make about that group? Thought Gallup had a couple of at least one really costly drop that I remember. What'd you make of the receivers and tight ends in this game?
Yeah, and the costly drop was on the comeback, and he's jumping in the air like Tinkerbell to catch a damn ball. I mean, just come back down the stem and make the play. I didn't understand that. I some of the things that these receivers do, Tavon Austin, some of the things that they do, I'm not real sure that I'm. And I'm going to point to the receiver coach because I'm not sure that they're on the same page. And when I say on the same page, I mean, even with how they substitute the receivers, that kind of thing is starting to, again, get to me. Now, I'm going to say Michael Irvin. And, yeah, Michael Irvin was in the Hall of Fame. Michael Irvin never came out of the game, literally never came out of the game. And he would jump. You know, he'd get after Ernie Zampezi if even Ernie in practice was trying to, you know, call and get practice going, call some routes a little quicker. And if he had Michael on a nine or a deep route, he may put somebody else in the game. You can't do that. Your frontline guy's got to be out there. I question whether Cooper is even 100%. I really do. I think he's an unbelievable route runner, but he – you know, he comes out of the game. At times, he doesn't look 100%. You know, Tavon Austin is just really depth. He's just the guy. Gallup, I still see some upside with. I like Cobb because he's a tough inside receiver. I do like Jarwin. I think he's kind of come into his own and kind of fashioned himself you know, kind of in that Jason Witten mold. I see some things out of him, especially blocking on the line of scrimmage that I like. So all in all right there, even though there were some critical drops, I'm giving that group probably the only real winning grade of the night, which was a B.
All right, the B for those guys, the O-line, there was some movement early, and obviously Zeke had a 30-yard run, and he hadn't had a ton of explosive plays this year. Looked like he was really going to have a nice game, and then, of course, the score kind of got away from them, and they had to get away from the running game. What did you think about the way the offensive line played?
Well, and you know, I thought Suofilo did a nice job tonight. I mean, there were some things that you could point to, and you could say, boy, this looked good. I mean, they were getting after it up front. I thought they were physical at the point of attack. Pass rush, they gave up a few pressures, and that, you know, Collins gave up a pressure. That bothers me a little bit. But when the score is so tilted, it's really hard when you're constantly, as an offensive lineman, having to pass set. No chance of running the football. Obviously, they were taken out of the play action game. But the thing that bothered me was late in the game, Dak took some shots. They've got to do better job versus just a four man rush. They've got to do a better job of protecting him. I gave that group a C minus.
Okay, C minus for the offensive line. And then running back, Zeke had his moments. Decided to, I don't know if he took himself out of the game. It kind of looked like he did. And here comes Olawale, the fullback. And, boy, that was a key play. I believe it was a 3rd-and-4 play. And he ran the wheel route. Dak threw it short. And it was another one of those throws out in the flat to a running back that spelled disaster for this team.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing I want to, you know, kind of talk to our listeners about, Matt, is, you know, a wheel route is really selling the flat and then going, or a rail wheel, selling the flat and then going up the boundary. This route is, we've spit routes have been in the Cowboys a long time, and we call it bullets. I mean, you could, it's an immediate release, and you've got one-on-one with that backer out there. And either you widen and you get the ball early where you can then get the ball and make a one-on-one move on that backer, or you run by him. Now, that's something that has to be timed out, and you have to run that a lot with the quarterbacks, like a back shoulder throw. It has to be timed out. You've got to do a good job of timing that. And obviously, to have a fullback in the game, I'd bet you he hadn't run that 5 times all year in practice, because that's either Pollard or Zeke. Well, Pollard was out, and then Zeke took himself out of the game. Again, I'm going to go to my point of reference, Emmitt. Emmitt didn't come out of the game. I hear you. You're tired. You've had some runs. But in this situation, boy, they needed the frontline guy in there. And I'm going to ding Zeke for that. I mean, you're getting paid the money right now to be the bell cow. Get your ass in the game and go make a play in a critical situation. He ran the ball okay. I mean, I really saw some things that I thought, okay. But, I mean, to take yourself out of the game and put a fullback in there on a bullets release route, you know, I can't give him anything but barely above an F, which is a D. You got to get yourself in the game and help your team make a play there.
Yeah, it really seems like it. It's for our people, when you say a bullet play, explain that a little bit.
Okay, instead of you said a wheel route. When you run a wheel, or a lot of people will call it a rail, you're going to go sell the flat, which is if you're to the left, you're going to be looking over your left shoulder.
Yeah.
And then when you get to the bottom of the numbers, you're going to turn vertical.
Yeah.
That's either a wheel or a rail. On a free release, what we used to call a bullet situation, the reason you're free releasing is because you're going to look over your right shoulder,
yeah,
instead of over your left shoulder on that side, and you're going to look for the ball now, or you're going to go, you're in a foot race to beat him to the end zone. And it's dependent on the leverage and the angle that backer takes, because what's happened is that defensive end has crashed inside, and allowed you a free release without having to chip that in. So
okay.
When you can get that free release and you can look like exactly what happened right there, he got the free release. He wasn't able to take the angle that Dak thought he should take in order to be able to get flat enough to then get the football and make, you know, you've got a two-way go there. You go into the boundary or you go, you know, you can cut back to the right. And so it's a different route than what I would say, you know, what I would call a wheel or a rail.
I gotcha. I did think the guy showed some pretty good speed on whatever he ran. You know, I kind of like.
Well, yeah, he did. He got out of there like he stole something, and that's kind of what I like too. I agree with you.
Okay, let's go over to the defensive side of the ball, and this team struggled and just got absolutely gashed in all areas. I thought Montgomery ran the ball pretty well. I thought Cohen came in, made some tough plays. And then, obviously, the quarterback for the second straight week, Josh Allen hurt him. Trubisky hurt them in a big way. That has not been a thing for him most of this season. And in this game, he absolutely destroyed them with his legs. Let's start with that that group up front, the defensive line. How did you assess their play?
They didn't play well. I mean, they didn't play well. But before I want to go there, Matt, I want to tell you they were out-schemed. And this is a reoccurring theme now that's starting to happen defensively. And when I say out-schemed, when you as the quarterback can run that zone read keep and you can gain those kind of yards schematically, you're guessing. So Rashard is guessing defensively. You can tell as a defensive staff, there is no cohesiveness here. This is a group that doesn't have any confidence. Therefore, it's transitioning to the players. They're not playing with any confidence. I mean, you saw Robert Quinn early in the year be able to get up the field. I mean, tonight he was in some run situations. He got hooked a couple of times. I think that's a schematic issue. I think it's a coaching issue because, quite frankly, he is an edge pass rusher. He has to set the edge. He can't get shoved all the way down inside. But I'm going to tell you, I think part of that is a coaching problem schematically with what they're doing with trying to put so much emphasis on getting pressure with four guys. I mean, I did not see Lawrence make a play. He jumps off sides in a critical situation. I saw Bennett jump off sides in a critical situation. I saw Covington get his ass smoked by a double team where he just sat there on the line and almost looked like it was just two tow trucks just butting noses, just standing up there butting titties with one another. I mean, it really was ugly. This group is the group that's got to play for the defense to have any chance. And they didn't tonight. D for the defensive line.
Boy, D for the defensive line and some topless talk there. When you move back, Stretch, to the linebackers, boy, that group, that left a little bit to be desired. The good thing is I thought Jalen Smith had some good celebrations. He was kind of bowling that ball or whatever he does. Had some nice celebrations there, especially when they were down like 24-7. But what did you make of that group, including Joe Thomas?
Didn't play well. This group didn't play well. They didn't tackle well. They didn't take good angles. I mean, this group, Jalen Smith has regressed. I mean, I hate that Sean Lee is having to play so much because really that should be Vander Esch out there. But tonight, Jalen Smith got exposed. He did cover the guy twice on the seam route, but then they came back and hooked it up in front of him, and he could not make the play. I mean, the guy caught the touchdown on him. Really poor angles, poor tackling. It's the first time I've been very critical of the linebackers. Linebackers tonight, because of the lack of tackling, lack of productivity.
Oh, wow. F for the linebackers. This may be a first this season. An absolutely failing grade for the linebackers. All right, Stretch, let's look at that secondary real quick. The You have been as critical as anyone, and you were early to this party. The cornerbacks, I look back at that one play you kind of were talking to me about. You and I will occasionally talk during breaks in the game and compare notes, and you know, I'll kind of tell you what I'm seeing. I know you love to, you trust my eyes in a lot of situations. That number 81, the tight end, that was a Woozier over there that was trying to use some like outside leverage on him. Isn't that the play that really bothered you, where the tight end, which Bears have had trouble getting any production from that position, and boy, they had all sorts of production against the Cowboys.
Yeah, they flexed the tight end out, and okay, Woozier wants to play outside leverage, which I got no problem with that because he's got a safety in the inside helping him. But you know, you have a tight end who's probably a 4.75 guy. How you can let him run a 19-yard slant on you is really unbelievable. I mean, it's one of those things where you look at it and you say, did that just happen? Did that really just happen? He's outside leverage. He can't put his foot in the ground and break underneath the guy who's a 4.75, 4.8 tight end who Green Bay had cut. And then, so that's maddening. And then about six plays later, they've got it down on the goal line, and they run an inside hitch from the six-yard line, and Byron Jones pedals 3 yards deep in the end zone. They throw the ball right in front of him for a touchdown. I mean, I'm not even going to talk about the angles Xavier Woods took that were poor. I don't want to give this group – I don't even want to give this group a grade, because, quite frankly, this group of defensive backs, they make my ass itch. And I'm done even talking about them.
Oh, man. That is a condition. Stretch, do we need to get you something for that? I mean, that is –
Yeah, you do. You need to get some new players in the Cowboys secondary, because they make my ass itch. Let me hit the exact with telling you, grading them, it's exactly what it does.
Man, that is those are strong words from Glenn Stretch Smith. Those were our stretch plays. With Stretch, we appreciate your time tonight. This is late in the evening as we tape this. We're all up late, but I think tonight, I think if there was any doubt at all that this was the end of this coaching staff and this regime, I think they answered the bell tonight. I think this is it, and I think we can all agree on that. Great work from you. Get some rest. And let's get it. Let's be ready to hit it. We're going to give you about a 9-day break, and then we want you to be ready to go after that as the Cowboys take on the Rams.
I appreciate it. And Mosley, no, I sit on G waiting for you to holler O. So I'm ready to go, buddy. Appreciate it.
All right. There he goes. Glenn Stretch Smith from WFAA and a longtime radio cohort of ours and former Cowboys coach and scout joining us. Hey, I want to do this right now. I want to talk about our new title sponsor. It is the Hudson Financial Group. And let me give you the website. In fact, I was just on the website, kind of looking around, and really, you talk about some comprehensive things that they kind of walk you through it. This is hfgventures.net. That is how you find it. hfgventures.net. I've had some friends and people who listen to our podcast ask, okay, what do they do? What are they up to over there? And the truth of the matter is they do a little bit of everything. What they want to do is create a relationship with you. And over time, they've created some incredible relationships and really reach out to people all across the Metroplex and all across the country. Randy Hudson comes from Carthage, Texas, former player at University of North Texas in the 1980s, did a good job blocking for them up front. Investment management, financial planning, including the comprehensive written financial plans, estate planning, property casualty insurance, and a variety of consulting services for clients based on each individual's financial situation. One of the reasons I love Randy Hudson and Hudson Financial Group is because they meet you where you are. Yes, they have huge corporations. that that need all sorts of comprehensive type coverage. They also have folks that are looking toward retirement, people that are just starting to think about starting to put some money away to send their kids to college. They think of all of these things. And I want you to call them. And let me give you that number. It is 469-402-0320. It is Hudson Financial Group. We appreciate them. Love our association with them. Ed, as we both kind of wrap things up late into the morning here, as the time approaches almost 2 a.m. in the aftermath of this, and of course, Frito working around the clock to make sure that Doomsday ends up there and is available for people as they drive to work tomorrow and listen to it at work. And we appreciate all our listeners as we approach 1 million downloads. Thank you. Thank you, everybody who's been a part of this one, and we appreciate it. And thank you, by the way, I think I would be remiss if I didn't say Clark and Craig Hodges from the Hodges Capital. I mean, unbelievable what they've done for us and their backing, and it's allowed us to continue to be successful, and we appreciate them. Almost getting choked up late into the evening as we discuss this. Okay, Ed, it's 6-7. The Eagles now have a chance on Monday night to, I believe they play the Giants, Eli Manning coming back. I really think they ought to bring back like Donovan McNabb or somebody. That would be a good matchup, or just kind of go old school. But the Eagles will try to get to 6-7 and tie up the Cowboys. Is there any part of like Cowboys fandom that almost wishes the Eagles would just put the Cowboys out of their misery and just win a game and tie them? Because if the Eagles do win and tie it and get this thing to tied at 6-7, I mean, I still feel like, based on how horribly the Cowboys have played, the Eagles have a better chance of getting hot than the Cowboys. Am I wrong there, or should I just admit that both teams are horrible?
I don't know. You know, the one thing that the Cowboys have going for them is they have dominated every team that they've played in their own division. They've won every one of those games handily. They have played terrible on the road against non-division opponents. I think they're now 2-7 against non-division opponents. So the only teams they can beat are the bad teams in their own division. And guess what? All they have to do is beat the bad teams in their own division one more time, and they're going to playoffs. And if you believe in what Jerry's clinging to is once they get there, they can straighten out all of their problems, and they can emerge as a team he thought they were going to be in weeks 1-3, that was going to be sustained and that was going to be their identity. But I don't know how you can have any faith in this team anymore, really, quite honestly. And I think the only reason Cowboys fans might want Philadelphia to win is because they want Jason Garrett to be fired sooner rather than later. And if they can collect a higher draft pick in the transaction as well, they'd probably be happy to end the season that way.
Yeah, I just, and you're right. Cowboys said last year, at least, they did fire an offensive coordinator. They traded for Amari Cooper. They did some things to save their season. And this year, other than just kind of like literally, as you said, just making some changes as they're forced to, they just have not made anything happen. Other than, I guess we could say, they did bring in Bennett. So they made the attempt there to bring in, and that was more
as a
motivational.
Did Michael Bennett gather everybody up after the pregame warm-up and deliver the speech on the field? Like, I don't get that. To me, that's alarming to me if I'm Jerry Jones, because
it's an indictment.
Michael Bennett, despite his credentials and despite the fact he's won a Super Bowl, he does not have a great reputation around the league. And even if he did, I'm not sure what it says about your roster and all these Pro Bowl players you have, all these young and accomplished players, all these great team leaders, namely Dak Prescott. Well, how do they just stand there and let this guy who's been with them a month, who's a rental player, take over their team and act as though he's the key leadership figure and the voice to get them ready for, kickoff on game day? I just don't get – I think that's a bad look.
Yeah, Yeah, it's a strange look, and but he's come in here, and did we get any report on, did he have any good post-game speeches or anything? Did anybody scream in the post-game, or do you think they're kind of through with that?
No, I didn't hear any loud voices emanating from the locker room. It was characteristically quiet inside. But to their credit, most of the players were available to comment, but I did not see Michael Bennett holding court and offering his thoughts. So I can't say what might have been going through his mind, but it was just a typically quiet locker room, like, you know, they've kind of come to accept this is who they are and this is what happens on game day.
You'll be happy to know, let's see, I was looking at something earlier that came across my Twitter handle. Jalen Smith did tweet out 52 minutes ago, hashtag clear eye view with some praying hands and a heart. And he also wrote something apologizing. To clear the air, I was unaware my opponent was down with an injury following a play in tonight's game. I understand how it feels to be down with an injury and would never wish that upon anyone. I celebrated after making a big play, sending a speedy recovery his way. And I did, I don't know if you remember that. It was when, I can't remember that guy's, is it number 83? He was trying to make a play at the back of the end zone. Wims, I believe, is his name.
Yeah.
And Jalen was back there with 24 with Awuzie, and they were making a rare, they were celebrating, and Awuzie figured out what happened, and this is kind of a moment of levity for the Cowboys. When Awuzie figured out that the guy was actually pretty hurt, he did a sign of the cross. He went straight from the celebration into the sign of the cross. So he did bless him. So anyway, Cowboys are apologizing for all their dances. And Jalen did make it up
They've
to him.
They've got a lot to apologize for. They should apologize for their performance. The one before that.
Yeah, for sure. But Cowboys lose again, fall to 6-7. Doomsday is there for you like always. Ed's been at it since noon today. He's gone many, many hours. And Ed, we appreciate all your hard work. And Frito will turn this around quickly. I've already come up with a good headline for this. Do you want to hear what
Beautiful.
I came up with?
Let's hear it.
All right, let me find it here. Frito, do you remember?
You don't remember it?
Oh, here it is. No, I just had to, I wrote it a while back.
Good, you didn't say it was memorable. I got to say, you didn't say it was memorable.
Bears put Cowboys in hibernation.
Okay, that's good.
Okay, good.
Let's go with that.
Approve of that. It is Ed Werder, live from Chicago, where at some Marriott in the city he will be resting his head. By the way, I don't know if you saw this. Did you see the quote from Brett Maher? The one thing he said is like, guys, I'll sleep fine. When my head hits the pillow tonight, I'll sleep fine. It's like, oh, my gosh. Oh, man. So
he's going to have a horse head in his bed when he wakes up tomorrow.
Maher. There is no way. If Brett Maher is still on this team tomorrow, then I will do a special. I promise, folks, if he is on the team tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, if he is still on this roster, I will come in and do a special Doomsday episode. And it'll be just...
You better be careful because they have a little extra time between games now.
Ooh.
So they might not react as fast as you want them to.
Okay, I'm going to say by Monday. Okay, today is Thursday. Yeah, by Monday he's going
to
be gone.
When they gather again to practice for the first time against the Rams,
yes.
If Brett Maher is still the Cowboys' place kicker at that time, you will do what?
I'm going to do a special edition emergency Doomsday. I'm going to give our people a special edition.
We'll get Chris Bonyol on the phone.
Honestly, Bonyol, even at age 50 or whatever Chris is now, Chris would be better. Who was that other guy? Roger somebody? Did they have a Roger Ruzick or somebody?
Roger Ruzick was a kicker.
Yeah.
They had some Zendejas's, I know.
Yeah, one of Zendejas's son is kicking for somebody. I just noticed that, like Arizona State or one of those.
What the Cowboys really need is Steve Hoffman to come back. He could always fix all these kickers. He could find him a late round free agent kicker and make the guy great.
Hoffman, I've missed Steve Hoffman, but he's still around. He's working with local kickers.
He's in Tennessee, I think. I think he's on the Titans staff.
Oh, Titans is okay.
Yeah.
We get Ross Hudson's making some points here. Who's at North Mesquite? A former Cowboys kicker is the head coach at North Mesquite. Ed, great work tonight. Get some rest, okay? And then we're going to give you a wake-up call tomorrow at about 6 a.m. to make sure you're up for your flight.
As you know, you won't be able to get through the operator to my room.
Tim Cedar, former Cowboys kicker Tim Cedar, is the head coach at North Mesquite High School.
If he has a spot on his staff, maybe Maher will be joining him.
That's right. All right, Ed, get some sleep, okay?
All right. Talk to you boys later. Thanks very much.
Safe travels. I hope your plane doesn't break again. Okay, good night. And that is the Doomsday Podcast from Frito Nation Productions for Hudson Financial Group, Ross Hudson, Frito Nation Productions for Ed Werder. I am Matt Mosley saying good night, everybody.
Stockings have been hung. No praise.